Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Cat owners know you don't own the animal, but the animal owns you. People know that cats are independent, aloof, and certainly don't care whether or not you're freezing while holding open the door, waiting for them to come back inside. But on the other hand, it's why we love cats, personify them, and use them as a means to define our relationships. Okay. Maybe not all of us do the last thing, but Peter Trachtenberg has. In his memoir, Another Insane Devotion, we see how he tackles his love of cats and persons.
Well, I think it was, you know, the book stems from an incident in 2008 when my favorite cat, a little yellow domestic short haired named Biscuit, went missing from my home in the Hudson Valley. And I was teaching in North Carolina at the time, and I went up, you know, to look for her, which a lot of people told me I should not, or there was no point in bothering. By the time the cat sitter told me about this, she'd been gone 3 days, and I wouldn't get up there for another one, so it'd be 4 or 5. I didn't have the money. I was broke at the time, and going broke every month, I was teaching in North Carolina because I was paying 2 rents. But I went up looking for her, and afterwards, I started asking, well, what is this thing? And I related it very much to, you know, the feeling that had come over me when I met the woman I married. It was something that sort of defied any of my calculations. So I began to look at the ways in which the two things were similar.
It's interesting how in the beginning of the book you said that you had had a few different cats, but, you know, you lost interest in them, and then you eventually found them other homes, but it wasn't until Bitey came into your life that you thought, well, you know, this is okay. You keep my interest.
Well, she kept my interest. It was partly because I actually paid attention to her, which I think is sort of the essential, you know, secret to loving anybody or anything, is that you pay attention to them, and pay attention to them in a kind of out of curiosity more than anything else at first.
That's an interesting way to put it, because I think a lot of people, the way that they think about their relationships isn't necessarily about paying attention to the other person, but having someone pay attention to them.
Well, yeah, that is a very common defect of character. And also, you know, in the beginning of most relationships with people, not with cats, we're kind of blinded by our desire for the other person. And also by, you know, by our worries about what they think about us. But really, like, the thing that in my experience, makes love endure is this kind of curiosity where you're almost content to watch that other person or that other creature be themselves.
And I like how Biscuit came into your life. And while we had just spoken about Bitey, who got her name so properly by biting everybody.
Yeah, especially me.
Biscuit just seems like the best cat out there. And I like how she came into your lives.
Well, she was some friends of ours found her hunched on the branch of a tree. It was early spring. There was a pouring rain. She was tiny. She was she wasn't 6 months old yet, and she'd been abandoned by her mother. Their dogs were barking and snapping below. They just wanted her as a snack, and she was petrified and very, very sick. They took her down from the branch, and they put her in a sort of outbuilding. They were afraid she wasn't going to make it because she was real sick. And my cat, Bitey, had died about a year before, and I was ready to get another cat, I thought. And I went to see her, and this little yellow cat, whose face was just still covered with nasal discharge, came up to me and just took my hand between her paws and began licking it. And there's a difference in the way that a cat licks you and a dog does, because a dog, to my mind, a little servile about it. When a cat does it, it's cleaning you. It's doing what it does with its kittens. It's claiming you.
Well, she certainly did claim your heart. And at the same time, we're going through with how you met your wife in the book, F. And I like how you are trying to figure out which F is the true F. When you first meet her at the club and she's playing her music, and it's the reactions that it's warm 1 second and then cold the other. And it's kind of like that with a cat, because you never know if they're going to be aloof or if they'll come over and claim you and lick you and say, all right, you're mine now.
Well, I think a lot of the book, I mean, you know, it's basically telling a story, but the thing that comes up really is how little we, or at least I, knew about the people or beings that I loved. That, you know, that almost everybody and everything is mysterious in a way. And, you know, love is partly about maybe encountering that mystery and maybe accepting it as something we're never going to completely know. And then also finding the things that we do know, which are, you know, just wonderful. Even the horrible things are kind of wonderful.
Well, it's that exploration that you're going through together.
Yeah.
As the book progresses, we're going back and forth. We have this story of you deciding to leave North Carolina looking for Biscuit. And then we're jumping back in time as you are learning more about F and learning more about your relationships and looking back at the ones that failed and how you lost interest just like you did with the other cats, but then of wanting to go further and explore what you have with F. I mean, I think your proposal to her says it all, especially where the ring was and the cats laying on your shorts.
Well, I had worked up my courage to propose. I mean, it was something I had never wanted to propose to anybody in my life. It took me by surprise. It disturbed me so much that I talked with my therapist. I said, isn't this like early to be doing this? I mean, is this healthy? And he kind of looked at me contemptuously. I mean, and, you know, I could imagine him thinking, well, a Brussels sprout is healthy. And I went there, and I had taken my mom's engagement ring out of the vault where it had been for years and years and years. And at the last moment, I couldn't find it. It was somewhere in my apartment. I went crazy. I had not told F that I was going to do this, but somehow I had it in my mind at this point that I either had to do it that weekend or else we would just drift apart. The same thing that had happened in all my other relationships would happen. And I went crazy looking for it. And then suddenly, at the last minute, I just dropped to my knees. And I wouldn't describe it as praying, but I just groaned out loud, well, what do I do now? What do you want? And at that moment, I saw the ring. And I didn't propose at once. I proposed the next morning. I was naked at the time. And there was a great deal of drama and how to approach her without humiliating myself.
It turned out well, obviously, because she did eventually say yes to you. And I think it's that honesty that you have. I mean, the candidness of what you say to F and what F says to you. I mean, you say, I want to marry you, but I don't know if I can live with you.
Yeah, that was true. Well, you'll notice that in the book, there are two different versions of that story, and one of which she says yes, and one of which she says maybe. And that's honestly because I can't really entirely remember what the sequence was. So I felt I had to include both.
Again, I mean, it's the candidness, though, of that moment. I mean, some people would remember forever, but other times you're just thinking, you were just so, I would think that you're just so completely, I don't even know if excited's the right word, but there's so many emotions going through you that you can't pinpoint it down. It's like people who say they don't even remember their whole weddings because there's so much going on.
Yeah, exactly. And often what they do remember is the most trivial and most embarrassing thing.
Now, as you're looking for Biscuit, and this is part of the mystery that is happening throughout the book, because the reader keeps wondering, oh my gosh, when you get up there, will she come to you? Because obviously your cat sitter doesn't really care.
He was afraid of cats. He was the worst cat sitter in the history of cat sitters.
And that's who really you want to trust Biscuit to.
Yeah, I didn't realize that at the time. I mean, you know, if there's any, he was a friend's kid, and if this book should have any takeaway, it's don't hire your friend's kids.
Never. But, I mean, luckily, you did make phone calls around to different friends and prior cat sitters to help look for Biscuit. But we're going through this mystery and wondering, oh, gosh, Biscuit, please be there once Peter gets to the house. And we are then going back and forth with the troubles that are happening with F. And the reader can only draw to conclusions thinking that, well, if Biscuit's not there, I think that Peter and F won't be together. because Biscuit's gone, and then I think the whole relationship will fall apart. But if Biscuit's there, then F will come back from Italy, and Peter will come back from North Carolina, and all will be good.
Well, there's a thing that I say earlier in the book. I say, you know, I talk about the way the two of us used to watch, let her out in the morning, and she would walk from house to house on our street and visit all the neighbors, and, you know, how we doted on her, and we would always call to her three times, going, Biscuit, Biscuit, Biscuit. And I say, you know, it's stupid to make an animal the emblem of your happiness, but in a way, that's exactly what she was. She embodied, whether she wanted to or not, some of the magic that there was between us for a while. And I think lots of people do that. They do it with lots of things, often unconsciously.
I agree with you. I mean, we were trying to combine our cats, and I'm thinking to myself, if the cats don't get along, that's telling you it'll never work.
Yeah, it's a bad sign.
Although you did have Tina and Bitey, and they didn't get along.
That was horrendous. I mean, Bitey made Tina's life living hell, you know, for the years in which she was alive. And the moment we first combined households and introduced cats, my cat Bitey, who was a black domestic short hair with an underbite, just shot out of her carrier, raced into the room where Tina was, and began, you know, shrieking at her and bullying her. And she did this almost every day until the day she died. I mean, she would wait outside that door for Tina to stick her little head out and, you know, and attack her. It was the great pleasure of her life.
Oh, it's so sad, poor Tina, but you can't help but laugh and think about the cat just waiting for a little pink nose to come out of the door.
Yeah, I know.
Well, this is a wonderful story, and I just love how you intertwined the love for the cats and persons. The name of the book is Another Insane Devotion. Peter, thank you so much for taking time and speaking with us.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Again, the name of Peter Trachtenberg's book is Another Insane Devotion. It is published by DaCapo. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Just